I'm getting blind. I can hardly see without them. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Can you hear me? Good afternoon. It is indeed a pleasure to welcome all of you to the 5th Urban Forum, and I might add to that you should feel free to continue with your dessert. I'd like to especially note some special guests with us this afternoon. The wife of our governor, Mrs. Milligan, who's sitting here. We're very happy to have her. And Mrs. Thompson, the wife of one of our trustees, is also a special guest of the College of Urban Development at our fifth urban forum. I might add, too, that Trustee Huff, Trustee Thompson, and Trustee Stevens are also sitting almost to my right here at the head table. I'd like to also acknowledge the presence of distinguished Professor Walter Adams and Mrs. Adams, who's with us directly ahead. And we have a very special guest from out of the state, Mr. Lloyd Johnson, former director of the Center for Urban Affairs at Columbia University, who is now the staff director for the Subcommittee on Equal Opportunities, the U.S. House of Representatives. And I'd like to ask him to stand, please. Mr. Lloyd Johnson. I might add, too, that he is privy to a large sum of federal dollars in that particular area. And so we will roll, not out the red carpet, we'll roll out the green carpet of MSU for Mr. Johnson. Right. I'd also like to welcome our friends from downtown. I'd like to ask all of the representatives from the House and the Senate to please stand. I know Mr. John Dahl is here. Lynn John Dahl, anyone else? Two forums ago, Detroit Mayor Coleman Young pointed out that the survival of our country depends to a great extent on the survival of our cities. At that forum, Mayor Young told us, America cannot survive if its central cities go down, if Detroit and other major cities are left to perish, the suburbs and the nation will soon yield to the same fate. Fortunately, the urban picture is not without hope. Many Americans have taken a new interest in our cities, realizing that future American life is destined to be urban. Able metropolitan leadership has been working to bring income and thus stability back to urban areas. This income is in the form of federal aid, such as revenue sharing, state aid, and also private investment and development. Innovative, dedicated, resourceful leadership is the key to urban restoration and rebirth. The College of Urban Development is training students to assume such leadership positions. The College of Urban Development is preparing students for careers in government policy planning, urban health services, education, housing, transportation, and other areas where a dedicated creative approach to urban human social problems is needed. The Urban Forum is a very important part of the college learning experience. The forum brings to the MSU campus outstanding individuals who are knowledgeable about urban needs and dedicated to helping urban people. These outstanding leaders from the university world, the private sector, and from government share their expertise with urban development students and with those in the university and outside community who are interested in helping to upgrade human life. Today I am happy to introduce a member of our university community who has demonstrated a sincere concern about the plight of the urban poor. He has been very instrumental in supporting and facilitating Michigan State University's urban thrust. With the support of the university community and the MSU Board of Trustees and his personal leadership, a major step was taken in converting the 4.5-year Center for Urban Affairs into a 4-year degree-granting undergraduate program. President Clifton R. Wharton, Jr. is a graduate of Harvard University, John Hopkins University School of International Studies, and the University of Chicago. He has throughout his career demonstrated resourcefulness and competence as an economist, a consultant in economic development and foreign affairs, a writer, and an educator. It is my pleasure to present to you Clifton R. Wharton, who will introduce our special guest.
Thank you very much, Dean Green, for that very marvelous introduction. As the chairperson for the Urban Forum, I was sitting here and suddenly reminded of my favorite story about individuals who are chairpersons. And I was thinking of sharing it with the group today because you are such an excellent chairperson of such a meeting. As you may know, we lived in Asia for many years and we picked up many stories. And one of them was to the effect that if you wanted to affect the future course of life of a newborn child, that the way in which this was done was to kiss the child's portion of the anatomy that would lead to that greatness. If you wanted the child to be a great speaker, you would kiss the child's lips. If you wanted the child to be a great writer or painter, you would kiss the child's fingers. If you wanted the child to be a great swordsman, you would kiss the child's arm. I don't know what portion of your anatomy may have been kissed, Bob, but you're obviously an excellent chairperson. That's the kind of joke that you can only really tell with good friends. And today, it's my very great pleasure to introduce the Honorable William G. Milliken, the governor of the state of Michigan. William Milliken was first elected Michigan's lieutenant governor in 1964. He became governor in January 1969 when George Romney was named U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Governor Milliken was then reelected to a 4-year term, which began in 1971. He was chairman of the Republican Governors Association from 1971 to 1972, and in 1972 was elected to the Executive Committee of the National Governors Conference. In 1972-73, he chaired the Upper Great Lakes Regional Commission, and in 1973 was one of the three governors asked to develop suggestions for a national energy policy. A graduate of Yale University, which I'm sure Walter doesn't hold against him. Governor Milliken also holds honorary Doctor of Law degrees from the University of Michigan, Eastern Michigan University, Central Michigan University, Western Michigan University, and the Detroit Institute of Technology, as well as an honorary Doctor of Humane Letters from Northern Michigan University. He has been a great friend and supporter of Michigan State University. I frequently refer to it as Bill Milliken's Law School. But despite all of these academic credentials, his remarkable career of public service, I think, stands as irrefutable testimony to the fact that there is nothing that higher education can do to corrupt an honest man. His concern for both higher education and urban development have been consistent themes in his political career. Thus, he brings both expertise and personal commitment to his topic for this afternoon, State Efforts and Urban Development. I present to you a friend of urban problems and Michigan State University, ladies and gentlemen, the Honorable William G. Milliken.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, President Horton. Members of the Board of Trustees, members of the faculty, members of the legislature, Lynn, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate that very warm and that very gracious introduction, even though it did come from a Harvard man. I forgive you for that. I'm very pleased and very honored to be here on this important occasion. I'm very pleased, particularly as I look around this room, to see so many directors of state departments present today. I do want to emphasize that it was not required that they be here. It was not compulsory. I have, of course, carefully noted their names. I think certainly you would agree with me that the subject we are discussing today, the questions and the problems of urban areas of this state and this country, this represents probably the single great problem area afflicting and confronting our state and our country today, along with all of the other difficult, oftentimes seemingly insoluble problems. This must remain one of the great and most difficult of all. I've on occasion made the comment that there are probably not more than six people in the entire state of Michigan who have all of the answers to all of the problems that confront this state, and you'd be amazed how often I run into them. I do, first of all, want to commend Dean Green, the faculty of this College of Urban Development, and its students for supporting this extremely valuable forum. I'm delighted in talking with Dean Green to know of the growth in interest and support for this College of Urban Development, and the fact that increasingly, year after year, you are now increasing the number of students who are majoring in this vitally important work, in addition to the total number of students, which will shortly exceed 1,000. The forum serves many useful purposes, having distinguished speakers to the campus to discuss their views on urban problems and focusing public attention on those problems. I am familiar with some of the outstanding work being done by the college, and I want to compliment all of you who are associated with it for the achievement of this college. Part of what is wrong, I think, with the cities of America today is regrettably part of what is wrong with the country as a whole, a depressing loss of confidence and erosion of the spirit. I think it is not inaccurate to say that probably more than at any other time in the history of this nation, individuals have lost faith in a very real sense in the institutions of government, in the political institutions generally, in the political parties, and in public officials. And the truth is that I don't really believe that we will be able to make the kind of startling advances in curing the ills of the cities until public confidence in government and public institutions is somehow restored. And let me say that nothing that has happened in Washington in the last couple of weeks has helped much to restore that confidence. The release of transcripts by the president was a step forward in getting at the truth of Watergate. But the net effect of the transcripts has been, in my opinion, only further to diminish public confidence. Leaving aside the question of the president's guilt or innocence, the transcript of the tapes can only have a depressing effect on those who have read it. I've not had the opportunity to read all of the 1,300 pages, but I've read a substantial part of that transcript. We search in vain for any discussion of what is good public policy. We search in vain for the kind of moral tone needed to restore public confidence in government and in the political system generally. We search in vain for any discussion about how the true facts of Watergate and related abuses of power can be uncovered and brought to light. But in fairness to the president, it should be emphasized that these transcripts are but excerpts from the presidency. Obviously, any final accounting of his presidency needs to be considered in the context of the overall record of his administration in domestic and in foreign affairs. What is needed most desperately is to restore this public confidence in politics and the institutions of government. Without a return of that confidence, there can be no dramatic progress towards solving the lingering problems of the cities. Any objective assessment, however, of the urban situation would have to conclude that progress is being made. In our complex society, this progress must be credited to many different levels of government, to many organizations and institutions, and of course to many people. The war on poverty of President Johnson's administration failed in many of its objectives, although it also scored some important successes. But perhaps one of the principal successes of that multifaceted program was that it proved once and for all that no amount of federal money is sufficient in itself to solve the problems of the cities. Federal money is needed, of course, and in very substantial amounts, but so is a vigorous local administration, an interested and a committed state administration, and last but not least, the commitment of the people who live in the cities themselves. Frankly, I've been very impressed by what is going on in Detroit under Mayor Coleman Young's new administration. His efforts to make the police department a more integral part of the community, his current drive to clean up the litter by stimulating community pride, his tough-minded and pragmatic approach to problems, these are some of the initiatives which he has launched to harness the most effective power for the revitalization of the cities, and that is the people themselves. Now, I'm not suggesting that city residents must bear the entire burden of the revitalization. I am only saying that while there must be government money, there must be something more than money too. The efforts of the state government in revitalizing our cities take many different directions and are not easily summarized. Perhaps the most important element in the state's efforts is a legislature and administration, which I think more than in years gone by clearly recognizes the urgency, the emerging urgency of urban problems, and makes commitments to a total effort to solve them. Early in my administration, I recognized that urgency and I gave that commitment. I'm not going to give you a complete accounting of the things that we have been doing for cities today because that would take too long. But I do want to mention a couple. One of the most important efforts in behalf of the cities has been in the area of revenue sharing. Since 1971, we have increased state aid to cities from $89 million to an estimated $165 million for the fiscal year 74-75, an increase of more than 85%. And in the 11 central cities, an estimated $81.6 million will be distributed in 74-75, an increase of over 116% from the unrestricted state aid provided in 1970 and 71. Transportation is another area in which we have moved aggressively in aid to the cities. The passage of a comprehensive transportation program 2 years ago recognized for the first time in Michigan that gasoline taxes should not be reserved exclusively for the construction of freeways. This transportation program earmarked part of the gasoline taxes for mass transit. And that money has now begun to flow to the cities to assist in the support of public transportation systems and to finance the creation of new means for transporting people in the cities quickly and cheaply from place to place. And frankly, I can't think of any single approach which can have a more effective response in the rebuilding of the cities than to improve dramatically the ability of people to move freely from one place to another, both to enjoy the cultural and enrichment opportunities of the city and to get to and from jobs. It has a vital, direct bearing on the economic well-being and the vitality of the cities and the people who live in them. And I might add parenthetically that we are in the process right now of attempting, having made that breakthrough of some 2 years ago with legislative and administrative support, executive office support, we are now in the process of developing a comprehensive total program of rapid transit and mass transit for the entire state, and of course with particular emphasis on the southeastern part of the state. The director of the Department of Highways and Transportation is here, and as a matter of fact, he and I and a number of others have a meeting in my office later this afternoon for the purpose of reviewing the process, the progress of a technical committee which is now working on that. The mayor of Detroit, representatives from SEMCOG and SEMTA, and the Department of Highways and Transportation, all of us and the governor have been meeting together to try to develop this coordinated, comprehensive approach. It can have an enormous bearing, I think, on helping to solve some of the almost insoluble problems of the cities. One of the first things we did in fulfilling our commitment to the cities was to open a governor's office in Detroit and staff it with people who were highly knowledgeable about the city's problems, who knew how to cut red tape and could together function as a kind of ombudsman for residents of Detroit who were getting nowhere with their problems and had no place else to turn. That office serves as a listening post for the city's problems, as a kind of observation post from which to judge the success or the failure of state programs and state offices there, and as a meeting place for myself and other state officials and officials and community residents. Help for cities does not always take the form of building programs or urban renewal. Very important aid for the cities can come in the form of help for the lower income people who live there. And in that respect, I believe our approaches have been successful. Because you are familiar with the details, I want only to mention the revision of the state income tax, which allows people of low income to reduce their tax through a formula which is tied to the amount of rent or property tax which they pay. And only last week, the legislature passed the proposals providing for relief from sales tax on food for people in the lower income brackets. Another area that I want to mention is housing. The success of the Michigan Housing Development Authority is providing financing for badly needed housing in many Michigan cities is, I think, truly remarkable. We have the director of the Michigan State Housing Development Authority here, Mr. David Froh, and he is doing an outstanding job in continuing on the tradition which this Michigan Housing Authority has established in meeting human needs. We have committed backing to over 20,000 units worth over $400 million. We know that not only are we providing homes for people who could not otherwise afford them, but that we are creating an economic impact. As a result of the authority's endeavors, over 16,000 jobs have been created. In addition, the authority has generated almost $12 million in local and state taxes. A recent example of the kind of enterprise the authority is involved in is Medical Center Village, a housing development costing over $10 million, which is being built in Detroit. It is one of my fondest hopes that through the Michigan State Housing Development Authority, that we're going to be able to work with the federal government and with the city of Detroit and with the people of Detroit in helping to convert some of the inventory which is presently held by HUD of thousands of houses, single dwelling houses, into a workable and manageable and sound program. The director of the authority and I and others, including the mayor of Detroit, are only in the discussion stages at this point. But I am hopeful and I am cautiously optimistic that we may be able to find a formula utilizing state resources which would avoid some of the pitfalls, some of the disastrous pitfalls which the Federal Housing and Urban Development Department got itself into, resulting in the mess, and that's the only word that I can use to describe it, which we now see in Detroit, in some other Michigan cities, and other major cities throughout the country. State efforts on behalf of the cities affect many other areas of life. Stepped up help for the aging, improved consumer protection, reform of the courts, programs to curb crime and drug abuse, and many other programs. I'm not going to stand here before you today and tell you that we are yet doing everything that must be done. But we are working very hard at it, working constantly to muster legislative programs for support of the cities and to find the money to finance our programs. An important element of any successful approach to urban problems, it seems to me, lies in the area of innovation. We need new ideas, and that's why institutions such as this college are so vital to the success of efforts by government. I've mentioned only a few of the ways in which state government is moving to deal with urban problems, but the actions of private citizens are absolutely essential to the rehabilitation of the inner cities. Above all, we must establish a sense of safety and security in our cities. Our cities must be made as safe by night as they are by day, which unfortunately is not now safe enough. How can there be a good life in the cities when people are afraid to go out on the streets? How can there be any hope for the cities when the only sense of excitement or adventure is the grim games people play to avoid muggers and rapists? Once an elemental kind of security is established, we can then better turn our attention to other things. New life must be brought to our inner cities if they are not to die. And what do I mean by new life? New apartment buildings, new office buildings, new stores and shops are important, but they are not the entire answer. In the center of our cities, we must create a kind of cultural magnet that will attract people by the thousands. In too many instances, downtown is not only a bad place to live, it's also a very unexciting place to visit. By cultural magnet, I don't mean necessarily a symphony and an art museum, although these advantages are wonderful where the resources exist to support them. London, Copenhagen, Paris, all have their special flavor, a flavor that took centuries to create and which generations have very tenderly preserved. Here in the United States, we cannot wait for the passage of centuries. We have to create this flavor now. The shame of our ghettos should receive our first priority. We do not have civilized cities where rats live side by side with people. The slums must be cleared away and not to be replaced by apartments for the rich and the wealthy. They must be replaced by good, attractive, varied housing for people of all income categories and all economic status. We have a long way to go in our efforts to make the inner city attractive and livable for all people, rich and poor. In an essay entitled Eight Goals for an Urbanizing America, Lyle C. Fitch wrote, "Obsolescent commercial and industrial buildings, bad taste in design, careless destruction of open space, and residential slums manifest a failure to recognize the needs of the human spirit for variety, vistas, openness, and grandeur. Nor can we flatter ourselves that in the 20th century we have gained the functional city or the efficient city, even by sacrificing the city beautiful. The task is not at all hopeless if we commit ourselves fully to its solution. And above all, we need, it seems to me, a massive change in attitude. We need to make it as unacceptable to spread ugliness in our cities as it is to commit a crime. The industry that pollutes the city environment, the individual who litters city streets or destroys the small patch of order over which he has control, both ought to be considered as criminal as thieves or pickpockets. We ought to establish the beautification of our cities as a national goal, alongside the elimination of poverty and racism. This can only occur if every individual accepts the goal as a personal goal. And this national goal cannot possibly be realized unless Americans dedicate themselves to it as individuals. The streets of American cities do belong to the people, to all Americans. They should be made safe to walk, and the air above them clean enough to breathe. They should be made safe and clean and even beautiful. For the cities of America are every bit as much of a part of our national heritage as the splendor of our mountains and of our forests. What happens in downtown Flint, to downtown Detroit, to downtown Grand Rapids will affect the quality of life in Michigan for generations to come, and not just in those cities, but throughout the state. That, it seems to me, is the fundamental lesson that we have to learn. What happens in Detroit and what happens in other central cities has a vital, direct bearing on the quality of life for every one of us, wherever we may live, whether it is the Upper Peninsula or in Lansing or in Traverse City or Kalkaska or wherever else. I am personally convinced that our cities can be saved, and I am pledged to do everything I can to help save them. I am thankful for the help of this college and for the help of thousands of citizens who believe, along with us, that this country cannot survive without cities where all people can live in peace and in dignity. Thank you very much.
I'd like to say before you leave that since we first enrolled students last September, we have not had an opportunity to confer degrees. However, without the approval of the Board of Trustees and the President, I took it upon myself a week and a half ago to present an outstanding award to an outstanding economist, Mr. Galbraith from Harvard University. So at least we are in the business of offering awards to outstanding individuals. The second such person to receive the honor today will be our governor, the Honorable Mr. Milligan. And the award reads, from the College of Urban Development, Michigan State University presents to Governor William Milligan for outstanding state and national leadership in promoting programs and policies to upgrade the overall status of the poor and disadvantaged. From the College of Urban Development, signed Robert L. Green. And since I have the president and the trustees here, I will seek their approval with a nod. And I'd like to thank all of you for coming. Good day.